1 John 3:16 to 18. The scripture reads this way. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for our brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. John called these people brethren. He called them children. He called them beloved 15 times. So do you think maybe they're believers? Yeah, they're believers. Just like they were in James. He's writing to believers in James. And once we knew that, we could understand James much better. And the same is true of 1 John. 1 John is probably one of the most misunderstood books in the Bible. But once we understand that he's writing to believers, then I think we have a real good chance to understand what he means. And today, we're going to try to see what he means by love. What is love? Have you ever seen love? It's like God. You ever seen God? About a little boy one time who drew a picture of God. And the Sunday school teacher said, nobody knows what God looks like. He said, well, they will now. Well, what does love look like? Well, you can draw a picture of it. But when you draw a picture of it, you'd be drawing what somebody does because of love, not love. Remember in, I think probably in third grade, our teacher taught us a little poem. And you know me and poems, I like poems. And it was, who has seen the wind? Who has seen the wind? Neither I nor you. But when the trees bow down their leaves, the wind is passing through. So you haven't seen the wind, but you know there is a such thing as a wind because you've seen what the wind does. Now, the way we can know about love is to know what love does. In the last three verses, John told us not to hate our brother, but to love our brother. But he left us there, or at least I left you there, because now he's going to tell us how to love. How do we love our brother? He gives, first of all, the perception of love. How do we know what love is? Well, we know that because of an example of love. He gives us an example. And he defines love in that way. You know, you can define things by all kinds of ways. You can define by an illustration. You can define by a contrast, define by comparison. And we're going to see how he does that in this section. First of all, he does love by contrast. Cain and Abel. Remember, he talked about Cain and Abel in verse 14. Cain hated his brother. He killed his brother. And why did he kill him? Because his brother's deeds were righteous and his were evil. So Cain killed his brother, and that was not love. That was the opposite of love. So it's a contrast between that and love. Now, Cain gave death in the place of life. Love is the opposite of what Cain did. So we say, look at Cain. That's an example of what not to do. That's negative learning. Well, that's good. We can learn that way. I think that maybe Cain professed his love for his brother on occasion. Don't you think? Who else are you going to love? You got a mother and father and two brothers. You got to love somewhere. And so he probably loved Abel one time or another and probably even told him so. Oh, I love you. You're great. And then he killed him. You know, it's like the gal who said to her husband, oh, I missed you so. And then she reloaded the shotgun. Well, she didn't miss him very much. Really, no love in there. So Cain gave death in place of life. On the other hand, Jesus gave life in place of death. When we deserve death, he gave us life. And so that's the picture he gives. We know love, he says, because he laid down his life for us. That's how we know love. So if you love, then you're like Jesus. If you hate, you're like Cain. It's a big difference from one end to the other. If you're like Cain, you hate, and that's like Cain. Then way over on the other side, you have Jesus. If you love, you're like Jesus, and there's no in between. You either hate or you love, see? So, he's saying, love like Jesus or hate like Cain, which will you do? Now, everybody would say, oh yeah, I love that. That's a contrast. I'm on Jesus' side. Oh, really? Then he gives love by illustration. And this is the one, the example, the picture. By illustration, Jesus laid down his life. He placed it down. He took his life, and it, literally, he laid it before the Father. It's like an offering. Remember the picture of Adam, of Abraham and his son, Isaac? Abraham placed him on the rock, on the altar, as a sacrifice before God. Jesus did the same thing, only Jesus is both the offerer and the offering. See? So he laid himself down on the altar as an altar for us. He laid himself down. He laid his life down on behalf of us. He says, this verse says, he laid down his life for us. And the word F-O-R is the word that means for the benefit of. It means on behalf of, but it also means in place of. Some people deny that. It's obvious that it means in place of. And here's one picture of it. Philippians 13. I'm sorry, thank you. Philemon. Philemon 13. And remember Philemon. Philemon was an owner of a slave. And this slave, Onesimus, left and stole things from Philemon, left and went down to hide himself in Rome, the big city. And while he was there, somebody, one of Paul's people who was with him, went downtown, and there was Onesimus. And so he said, hey, do you know Jesus? Always witnessing, just like Paul. And so he led him to the Lord. Now, let's go back and talk to Paul. So he brought him back to Paul, and he served Paul. He loved Paul. And so Paul thought, man, I'd like to keep him here. He's a real help to me, but I can't do it because he's a slave. He belongs to Philemon. And so he wrote a letter to Philemon, and he said, in verse 13, he says, whom I wish to keep with me, Onesimus, I wish to keep him with me, that on your behalf, in place of you, same word, in place of you, he could serve me. So, I know you owe me so much, and later on he says that. Hey, Philemon, I'm not going to tell you how much you owe me. No. But Philemon loved him. Philemon did owe him some things. So he said, well, Onesimus could stay here and work with me in your place. So, he might minister to me in my chains for the gospel. Nevertheless, he sent him back. See? But all, I'm using that word there. That he might, I wish to keep him with me, that on your behalf, in place of you, he might minister to me. That's what he's saying. So that word means in place of. So Jesus died not just for us, not just for the benefit of us, but he died in place of us. It's the same as the, in that meaning is the same as the other, another preposition. In Matthew 28:20-28, he says, just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom, and this is the word in place of, still translated for, in place of many. So he died in place of us. But you know my favorite verse for giving the gospel is 2 Corinthians 5:21. For God made him to be sin who knew no sin, in place of us, epev, same preposition as here, in place of us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. He took our place. He substituted for us. And when he died, I died. By faith I make death mine, and that death is mine. I died on the cross. So God can't say to me, God cannot say to me, you're a sinner. Somebody's got to pay for your death. Oh, no, no. My death has been paid for. I died for that. No longer any payment against me. And so the famous question when I stand before the Lord and say, why should you be here? Why should you come into my heaven? Well, the reason I should come into my heaven is because I died. I died for my sin. I died in Jesus Christ because he took my place. And if he's there in my place, then I died. My sins are paid for in him. So that's it. He died. He laid down his life for us. And he loved us that much. So that's a picture of a love by illustration, by contrast, by illustration, then by comparison. He says, the one who hates lives in death. Verse 15 said that. He who does not love, or he who hates his brother, abides in death. But the one who loves abides in life. And so, verse 14, he says, we know we pass from death to life because of that, because we love the brothers. So there's a comparison there between the hate and the love. All right, so that's the example of love. Now he gives us an exhortation to love, B, in the outline. He says, because of that, we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. We ought. It's necessary. In fact, that word ought is the word necessary. It's necessary for us to do that. Necessary if we are to serve the Lord, if we are to please the Lord, if we are to love, then we must lay down our life for others. Now, there are three words for necessary. They're all found in Hebrews chapter 2. This is one of them. It's a moral necessity, this one. This is a moral necessity. If Jesus laid down his life for you, then you ought to lay down your life for others. It's just morally right. It's just the right thing to do. There are two others, and I thought I had them. Don't have them. Okay. That's one means it's a practical necessary, and the other is a logical necessary necessity. But this one is a moral necessity. It's just right, the right thing to do, the morally right thing to do. So, to whom do we owe this expression of love? Well, we owe it to brethren. Isn't that what he says? We ought to lay down our life for everybody in the world. No. You ought to lay down your life for your neighbor. No. For the guy who says, I'll work for food. You're responsible to give him something. No, it doesn't say that. Lay down our life for our brothers. The brethren. The group. The church. People in the church. Now, we're not responsible to take care of our neighbors. We're not responsible to take care of the world. I don't think it's altogether bad. We can. We can show our gratitude for all that we have and help the people in the tsunami or some earthquake somewhere. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But I don't believe that's what he's saying here. He's not saying it's necessary that we do that. A fine thing to do. But not necessary, and it's not what John is saying at all. Brethren are people of the same family. We are of the same family, born of God. And we are together the family of God, as expressed here. I think we ought to do things, other things than just in the local church. We ought to do them, but with an evangelistic outreach. Be good to people, do things, but we ought to keep in mind that there's an evangelistic outreach to it, and that's our purpose. Too many times, I see churches that have the food pantry, they have all the clothes and all, and whatever they do, and the gospel never gets out. They're so busy doing this thing, doing this, doing that, and where's the gospel? And where are the people being saved? So we need to keep the evangelism first and foremost as we do those things. So there's that aspect of it, but that's not what John's talking about. I used to preach in the rescue mission. And you know what happened there? Before the men go in to eat, they come into the service. they had to listen to me before they can get the food. You know? That's their idea. And that's their punishment. And that's their privilege to hear me. To hear me preach before they went in and got the food. Well, that's a good order of things, you know. Make sure they hear the word. Make sure they, and many of them did. I know the Miami Rescue Mission ministry pretty well, And they have a great ministry of getting people saved, getting them out of the gutter, and moving them on into churches and into the Christian life, being real service for the Lord. Not everybody does it, but they do have that. But the key is that they know where they're going. They know why they're there. And they're there to win people to the Lord. And the way they do it is by the things they give. So, the family of God is what John has in mind. Now I can hear somebody say, well, didn't Paul say something about that? Paul said, do good to all. Galatians 6:10, he says, therefore, when we have opportunity, let us do good to all. And then just in case you think he means all, just all of the church, he says, especially those who are of the household of faith. See? So we have the idea of doing good to all, especially the brethren. So Paul has a different aspect to it. And I think part of what we just said is what he's saying. What about what Jesus said? Remember, there's a judgment described in Matthew 25. And that judgment, Jesus is going to separate the sheep from the goats. Sheep, goats, right hand, left hand. He's going to do that on the basis of, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was naked and you clothed me. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was in prison and you visited me. And they're going to say, when did we do all these things? And he's going to say, if you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. See? And so some people say, aha, see, we ought to be doing all this out there because that's what Jesus said. Well, that's not what Jesus said. What Jesus said was, if you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, what's the context? The context is the tribulation period. Right after the tribulation comes Jesus and has this judgment. All the nations of the world gathered before him, the people of the nations, and they are judged on the basis of that, what we just said. The tribulation period, what have they done? And then he says, inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren. I just taught yesterday in Greek, the near demonstrative and the far demonstrative. These, my brothers, is a near demonstrative. Right here, right now. And I think what he did, he just pointed out, when as much as you've done unto one of the least of these, who are these? The 144,000. The 144,000 could not buy or sell. They were in trouble because they were serving, preaching the gospel and so forth. And I think when Jesus said that, unto one of the least of these, my brethren, he's not calling them brethren. He's saying, least of these, my brethren, you have served them. And because you've served them, then I'm giving you enter into the kingdom. Well, this whole business then is that the context of tribulation and not of now. That's probably one of the most misused scriptures that we have. So, to whom should it be done? And then what should we do? Well, we should lay down our lives. What? Yeah, that's what he says. We should lay down our lives for the brethren. Are you ready? Ready? You're going to lay down your life for the brother? Do you think he means that? That's what it says. I think it's what he says. That's what it means. For, that word for there, the same word that Jesus died for us, in place of us. Take a bullet for him. You know, jump in front of him, take the bullet. Lay down our life for the brothers. I think that's what he's saying. Now, is that reasonable? Well, Moses, remember when Moses, when the people of Israel went astray and God said, I'm going to destroy this whole nation. And Moses jumped in the way. No, don't do that. Take my life. Save the nation. Because if you kill this nation, everybody's going to say, look, he brought them out of out of Egypt, but he couldn't help them, and they finally couldn't do the job, and he gave them up and killed them. No. But Moses was saying, I'll die in their place. Well, that's a good example of that. Paul said in Romans 11, verse 3, Paul said, I could wish myself accursed from Christ. That's laying down his eternal life. I could wish myself accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen according to the flesh. The nation Israel, I'd die for them. I would die eternally for them. And I don't think he was doing hyperbole. I think he was saying, yeah, I wish that. Because you see, dying is the easy part. Really? Well, you die once, you know. Take the bullet. Yep. All over. Gone. Or you could live for the brethren. You know? Work for the brethren. Do things every day for the brethren and the sister, of course. It's easy to die. It's another thing to live. It's another thing to do it day by day by day, helping the brothers, loving the brothers. So, I think we're to do things up to death, but willing to die, willing to live for the brothers as well. Now, so we have a perception of love, and we have the practice of love. Now, what is the practice of love? Well, the conditions. He says, whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart after him, how does the love of God abide in him? So, the conditions are these. What he has this world's goods. It's the word for life, actually. It's, there are words for life, the soul and life, and then this world's goods. It's the things of life. Is what he's saying. Making a living. We talk about making a living. Well, that's what he's talking about. The things that we have to live. See? Food, shelter, so forth. Well, he says, he has this living. Whoever this man is, he has the living. He has the ability to live for himself and to share with others. And then he says, a picture of that is in the widow's mite, Mark 12:44. They all put out, Jesus said concerning the widow, they all put in out of their abundance. But she out of her poverty, for she has put in all she had, her whole livelihood. There's the word, livelihood. So this man has the livelihood. So he's has the ability, the things that are necessary. That's what he has. Then what he does, he says, he sees his brother having need. Oh, this is what he sees. He sees his brother having need. This word see here is not just glancing. It's not just he looks at him and goes. No, it's the word theoreo, which means we get our word theater from that. When you go to the theater, you don't just look and go. You know, you sit there. And some of those things are just in no termination at all. We saw one Friday night. Anyway. You see, you behold as a parade, if you will. That's what he's saying. This man had the things of this life, and he saw his brother. He saw him day by day by day. That the man is poor. He has a need. See? And so he beholds him. Now, the brother doesn't have enough to live on. That's the key. This brother has it. The other brother doesn't have it. Of course, what's enough? He doesn't have enough to live on. In different places, it means different things. If he's in a far-off place in some country where they make $100 a year, whatever, and you give him, you could give him $5, that man goes wild, you know. It depends on what he needs, is what he's saying. So, what is enough? It's going to vary. Now, what he has, what he sees, and what he does. What does he do? Notice, it doesn't say he does nothing. It doesn't say he doesn't do anything. No, no. He does something. He closes up his, King James, I like King James. He closes up his bowels of compassion. That's what it says. That's really what it says. My text here in New King James says, he shuts up his heart. Oh, that's not nearly as well, as good as bowels of compassion. Well, why? Bowels of compassion, what does that mean? Well, the Greeks had the idea that your seat of emotions was in the stomach. Why? Well, do I have a lot of emotions? In the stomach. Because I think, and you ever get real stressed about something? I'm thinking more of the young man. He gets his wife, his girlfriend throws him over, and he gets sick. He got pains in his stomach. You know? And I think that's what they saw. And they said, oh no, bowels of compassion. Your stomach is your seat of emotions. Because that's what gets affected when you have emotional problems. They called it the nobler viscera, the stomach and the kidneys. I think a young man then would be saying to his girlfriend, I love you with all my kidneys. It kind of loses something in the translation, I think. Maybe a valentine would be kidney-shaped. That'd be a neat valentine, wouldn't it? Yeah, there you are. There's a kidney-shaped valentine. Yeah. Well, in any case, he closes up his compassion. He closes up his, and we say heart, that's all right, but he just doesn't do anything for him. And notice he doesn't say he didn't do anything. He looks at him, what does he need? I know what he needs, I've seen him, but I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to hold on to what I got. You know? As my brother used to say, he won't get up off his money and give him anything. Yeah. So he closes up what he has, closes up his heart against him, and will not give him anything. So that's the condition. Now, what are the implications? The implications of this, and he asks a rhetorical question here. How does the love of God abide in that man? And the answer is, it does not. The love of God doesn't abide in him. Oh, well then, does that mean he's unsaved? No. No. The love of God is not abiding in him. Doesn't say God is not abiding in him. Doesn't say he's not saved or salvation is not with him. No. He says, the love of God does not abide in him. He's a brother. He's a brother who has a brother who is in need. So he's a believer. He can't lose his salvation. And John is writing to believers. We've already talked about that. But he's walking in disobedience. He has not done what he knows he ought to be doing. And his callous attitude toward his brother prevents the love of God from flowing through him to his brother as the love of God flowed from Jesus to us. That's his key. Now, the love of God is not in him. He's not in fellowship with the Father, not in fellowship with the Son. He's not in fellowship with his brothers. He's not in fellowship at all. That brings us to the plea for love. We saw the perception of love, the practice of love. Now the plea for love. Little children, there you are, little children, you believers, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed or in truth. Love the Christian way is what he's saying. And he describes it negatively and positively. Not in word. Let's not love in word. James says something about this, remember? He says, if a brother or a sister is naked and destitute of food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace and be warmed and filled, but you do not give him the things which are needed for his body, what does it profit? Right? In other words, the same situation, and you say, oh, brother, be warmed and be filled, you know, doesn't do a thing. How does the love of God abide in that man? Don't be loving just in word or in tongue. I really think he's saying the same thing over again, word and tongue, same truth. First he speaks of the words that come out, then he speaks of the source behind the words, that is the tongue. So I don't know what else to say about that, except that we should not be speaking and using our tongue just to to say something that we're not going to do. Well, James says a lot about that too, doesn't he? In James chapter 3, he talks about the tongue. So that's the negative side. The positive side is we ought to love in deed. That word deed there is the word work. And sometimes this expression of love is work. Someone said, when all is said and done, more is said than done. Well, that's what John is fighting here. Don't just say it. Do it. And if it takes work, then work. So John is saying, when you see a need, don't spend a lot of time talking about it. Don't have committee meeting. Oh, let's all get together and decide what we're going to do here. No, we don't need to do that. What will the church do? He's not saying what the church should do. They didn't have a church treasury back in those days. It's up to us. See the need, and then meet the need. Don't just talk about it. Don't plan it. Don't have a committee meeting about it, but do it. That's all. Just do it is the way to go. And we do it in truth. Do it not just meeting the need, but do it according to the Word of God. You think our expression of love and our giving to other people should be expressed, should be regulated by the Word? Well, sure. Everything we do ought to be according to the revelation of God. So, he's not saying just go around and give out food and clothing and shelter to everybody. I'm not saying that. But he's saying, check the Word. What does God say? Here's one thing God says. 1 Thessalonians 2:10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this. If anyone will not work, neither let him eat. Whoa. There's some regulations there. Don't let him eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you who are disorderly, in disorderly manner. They're not working. They're busybodies. They have time to go around and talk and carry tales and all that because they don't work. Now, those who are such busybodies, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. So there are certain ways, certain things that we have to discuss, have to find out in the Word and say, all right, I'm not going to give. That person won't work. They won't work. I'm not going to give. But John's not talking about that. John is saying we have a responsibility to work with these brothers. So what's the conclusion? Well, the conclusion of the matter is we are brothers and sisters in Christ. We're part of the body. When one part of the body hurts, we all hurt. I have a sore toe right now, and it hurts. I don't know what it is. Should I go to the doctor? Probably. Will I go to the doctor? Probably not. But my toe hurts, and my whole body, my knees are getting to hurt because I'm limping on that. And the whole body is feeling that. And my tongue even talks about it. I want some sympathy from somebody. But what? Thank you. What I'm saying is, if one person, one part of the body hurts, we all hurt. That ought to be our consideration. Together, we're going to see to it that everybody, we want to know what's going on with everybody. We ought to help everybody as much as we can.